Did you know that you can watch the next Femme Forte episode 1 week early on the Stride TV app? Use the code Femme Forte to get 50% off your Stride TV subscription for exclusive videos and live streams and to chat with me and our incredible community. Femme Forte is sponsored by Ultimate Drillbook. UDB app modernizes marching band. Spend less time, have more fun, and achieve at a higher level. Just upload your drill from Pyware into the UDB app and everyone in your band gets animations with your show music, precise pathways, synced music, notes, props, and so much more. It's just easier. Head to ultimatedrillbook.com and use code FEMFORTE when you order to get 20% off UDB App Pro.
I love those moments that you can show students that you, whenever you're vulnerable, like it's also okay. And like, it's okay to be wrong and it's okay to, you know, like make mistakes and do, you know, like I like those moments for those reasons of like teaching young minds that it's okay for those things to happen type of thing.
Welcome to Femme Forte, a place where we have real conversations with influential female music educators and performers. I'm your host, Amanda DeVries. In this episode, I talk to someone who I'm so very fortunate to call a very close dear friend of mine. Jennifer Hanford currently serves as the head band director at James Bowie High School. Jenna's always supported this podcast even before it existed, and it's so bittersweet to end this inaugural season with her. Welcome back to Femme Forte. Today we have Jennifer Hanford from Bowie High School. Thank you so much, Jen, for being on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I am so excited to finally be able to do this. Like I said before, like you were absolutely one of the first guests I wanted to have on this first season. And I'm so lucky to not only have a chance to, you know you personally, but like as a band director, but also like be able to call you a really close friend of mine. And like, honestly, that's so humbling. And the fact that you're on this show, it like just brings something special and extra to this episode. And I know like once I go back in the editing room, like I'm just going to be like, I'm going to be crying. Like, I want to cry tears of joy right now because we have been talking about this forever. Like, this has been like in the works. It's finally happening. Months of progress. And to be honest with you, before I record like my actual episode, like you are the last person I'm recording for this specific season. And like the fact that it's full circle, oh my gosh, I'm gonna start
wow,
crying right
that's
now.
Amazing. Like, congrats. Like, you were able to do an entire season, have all these awesome people on here to talk about their lives and experiences. Like, that's what this is about. And you made that happen.
Yes.
So that's amazing.
Thank you so much. It's literally so... there are literally no words to describe about how I feel. The fact that, you know, we are literally weeks, days away from having this become public, and the fact of like such a journey of all the people that I've interviewed. Like, honestly, like I had the initial thought process of having you first, but honestly, the fact that you're last, like, I think, you know, everything happens for a reason. Everything is meant to be. And it just makes it all more that much more special for me. And so I will live in this moment forever.
What's really cool, honestly, is being able to see the different places that you've already done this. And then you're finally like in this location now.
Yes.
Which seems like the most appropriate, I think, of all the ones that you've had, you know. And it's cool that you started in like the rented house in San Antonio.
Yes.
At DMEA, you know, and then we're in the Media Bay and like now you're here. So it's cool to see the like progression just, you know, with the different people, but also in like the progress of the studio and, you know, what you've been able to do with that.
Yeah. Cool. Like finally one, this podcast has a home. And so I'm so glad to and so fortunate to have this space and to be reaching out to even more people who are interested. And the more that, you know, this spreads like wildfire, I really am hoping at some point to create somewhat of a positive change in someone's life.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we're just gonna like jump right into it. I mean, I know who you are, but go ahead and tell our viewers and our listeners kind of who you are, where you're from, a little bit about your background into music and music education.
All right. Well, as she said, I am the new director of bands at Bowie this year. I have been an assistant for the past 6 years there. So I started there in 2016. That's originally when I moved to Texas. And before Texas, I actually lived in Arkansas. Some people are like, wow, that's not something you would actually think. But I actually loved it up there in Northwest Arkansas. I lived in Fayetteville, and I actually worked with Bentonville High School. And that was just a great community, really great teachers. Before there, I lived in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and went to Broken Arrow High School and then went to Tulsa University. So I got to kind of stay in the same area. And then that's when I moved to Arkansas. I realized I didn't really want to teach there. And I wanted to be in Texas where, you know, all the music educators seem to kind of draw themselves to at some point in their lives, I feel like. So I kind of wanted to try it out. So, anyway, I was really excited to get a job in Texas. I'm not going to lie. It was actually really difficult. not being from Texas, it showed that it is, it's a little more challenging for people to, be willing to hire you if they don't know your background and they don't know that you have been taught, you know, the methods that Texas does. You know, it's a little bit more intense in certain ways and certain aspects that it's not really in other states. Still other amazing bands and stuff in other states, but you know, Texas is still kind of where everyone, like I said, kind of draws to at some point. And so I'm glad I came down here and got a job at a school that I really like and people that I like to be around. And Austin is just a really cool city to be, you know, to be in and to live in. It's the coolest city I've lived in so far, for sure. And it's just really fun to be here. So I'm glad that I ended up in this place.
Yeah, I mean, even when I moved to Austin, like, I honestly didn't always know where I wanted to move. But the fact, you know, when I got this job, like, I'm originally, like, from the San Antonio area, but where my high school is from, like, a really small town. So even after high school, I moved to Texas A&M Kingsville, which, yes, Kingsville is, like, a college town, but it's also, like, a relatively small, you know, smaller university compared to your larger universities. And so I always said I went from a small town to another small town. So yeah. The fact that I, like, came to Austin, like, one, I experienced a huge culture shock. But even since being here, like, I've always been a kind of, like, want to be in the city kind of gal. And so, yeah, I can agree with you that Austin is definitely the place to be for me. And I'm glad I'm here.
Yeah, I mean, it's the live music capital of the world, basically. Or at least around this area, especially in Texas, you know. But there, you can find live music anywhere. And it just is a cool, like, accepting city, you know. And I just think that that's kind of unique as far as, like, a lot of Texas cities. And so that's why I really like being here.
Yeah. So one of the things that's, like, really interesting that you said was, you know, I'm sure that you never necessarily pictured yourself being in Texas, but, like, you also, I believe, never pictured yourself being, like, a band director either. From what I know about you, I know that you were almost about to quit band. So, like, what was the turning point for you that made you decide to stay and then want to be a music educator?
Right. So I have a couple of band directors from my time in like middle school and high school who still love to kind of tell this story because it's kind of funny. but when I was, I mean, I still don't know how or why I picked the oboe to play. I just think I didn't know what it was. And I thought it sounded funny. Little did I know that it was going to be a lot of stress in my life. And I wasn't very good at it. Like, no one really is when they first pick it up. Yeah. And so I didn't really enjoy band. And so, like, sixth grade, I was just in it because my friends were in it. And then I didn't want to be it anymore, but then they stayed through seventh grade. So then I guess I'll stay too. You know, I had nothing else to do. It was either that or, you know, like PE or choir, or, you know, you had to do like some other elective that I wasn't really interested in either. So I might as well just stay where my friends are.
Yeah.
And then, eighth grade, same thing, just was not really enjoying it. And I did not want to go to high school. And by that time I had three different directors. So I had never had someone consistent and it was always someone really different. And I will say that one of those band directors was not fond of our oboe section, and he ended up putting us in the fourth row in between the trombones and the tubas.
Oh my goodness.
So that's also why I was like, well, it makes sense that I also kind of like a low brass personality, because I was like, I was just like stuck back there with them the whole time. But anyway, it was just, I had such a interesting middle school experience that I really just wasn't interested in doing it. But I had a band director that, his name might be familiar for some people, but Steve Vento, who has been working in, with Blue Springs in Missouri and works with the Blue Devils now and stuff. But he, a long time ago, used to work with Broken Arrow, and, he actually like sat me down and convinced me to stay and said that you were going to enjoy your time in high school. And if he was like, and if you still don't like it, you can come and yell at me and quit. And like, he just kind of convinced me that like, no, I'm telling you that you're going to enjoy it and you're going to like it more. But I didn't even want to do marching band. I wasn't interested in it. I didn't want to do anything with band. Not a lot of people know, but I was actually a cheerleader at that time. And that is, you know, it's a lot different from what band is, and the people are a lot different. And so, that's where I thought I wanted to be. And then as soon as I got to ninth grade and I was around those people, they just were not the people I wanted to be around at that time. And the community was not what I liked. And then I was still going back to band and those people in band and my friends in band and the culture and the community that felt, you know. And I started to see, you know, how much of a community it could be. And it was at one point I actually had a friend of mine who didn't know I was a cheerleader, and I showed up to school in my uniform for like a football game, and they like wouldn't look at me or wouldn't talk to me. And I asked what was wrong, and they just said, I've just never had a cheerleader talk to me. I didn't know you were one. And it like kind of culture shocked me a little bit to be like, wow, yeah, like that's not like, I'm not trying to be mean about like, I love cheerleaders, yeah. Like that's not what I'm trying to say, but like that's just that was like the perspective of like, oh, they're too good to talk to band people. And that kind of broke my heart. And honestly, like the team I was around was kind of like that, and I didn't want to be associated with that. And so I realized all my friends and the good people were in band, you know. And I wasn't marching band my freshman year, but I watched it and I watched all my friends do it. And it was a really cool show. It was called Pure Imagination. It's kind of like, you know, a little twist on Willy Wonka. And
yeah,
it was such a cool show. And anyway, I really loved it. And I kind of fell in love with the like artistry of marching band and was like, wow, that actually looks kind of cool and kind of fun. So I ended up doing it my sophomore year, and I picked up a clarinet and learned how to play it and was able to, you know, hack around on the field. And then honestly, I don't know what inspired me. I wish I knew, but somehow I tried out to be drum major my junior year and I made it. And I don't know, like I said, don't know why I decided to do that, but I did. And so then I, you know, was kind of leading this group for 2 years, and one of those years we happened to win Grand Nationals. And so it like the feeling of like being a part of excellence was like one of the first times I'd ever had that in my life. And to feel, like I said, the like community part of it, because it was such a like bonding moment for our entire organization. And it was the first time that they had ever had like public success, believe it or not. That was back in 2006. you know, and anyway, so just being around that and like being around Darren Davis, like he was such an inspiration. Honestly, we didn't get along a lot in high school. We kind of butted heads, but I also think in a good way, like that was, you know, a good thing for me to kind of learn about that. But it put me in my place a lot of times, which I needed as a high schooler. And I know that my high schoolers need every now and then. So anyway, just getting inspired by him and the people that I was around, and just knowing that I was like, this is kind of what I want to do. And what actually finally set me over the top to decide what I really wanted to do was whenever me and one of my good friends, Chad Graves from high school, went up and watched DCI in 2008. And that was like my first real drum corps show. And I was just like, oh my God. Like, it was so cool and intense and exciting. And I had never really been exposed to that before. And so that like really motivated me to be like, I want to be involved in that. Like, I want to do it, and then I want to teach it, and I want to, you know, like it, and it just kind of happened from there. Basically, you know, I marched Blue Coat shortly after that, in 2010 and 11. And then, I was able to work at Owosso High School for the first time, and like starting at Owosso High School and teaching with David Gorham and Jana Gorham and Sean O'Kelly and like a lot of these just awesome people at that school, like, really helped me understand that, like, oh, I can actually be in really good places with good people, good educators. Like, it was a good school, but it was the people that I was around that was so so meaningful. And like, that's truly what made me feel special about all these places, was just like the hominess that it kind of felt, and that they all just wanted the same thing. Like, all of the educators just wanted the band to be good. And that's what I realized, like, they just had really good expectations, and the way they delivered it was also really wholesome. So that just kind of inspired me to want to do that. And I mean, being a teacher sucks. It's not fun. But being a band teacher and a music teacher, like, that is actually really fun, because you have students who, you know, for the most part are willing to be there and wanting to be there. And so it makes your job a lot easier. And I just kind of realized that, like, I wanted to teach kids, and I wanted to be the kind of person that I knew I had in my life for those kids, just because that was really important for me just as a person. And so being able to try to do that for the students I have now is kind of what I try.
Yeah. And it's so cool to see your journey of, you know, like you said, like, almost leaving band and then automatically like stepping up to be like a leader in your organization, and the impact that band and your band directors had on you, and being able to want to bring that to your students is like, honestly, like, super inspiring. And I mean, I know like a lot of other band directors can say the same, but you mentioned a really good point, like the community it brings. I think that's something I can also relate to entirely. And I think more and more, as I figure out my adult life, I am starting to learn like how grateful, and the fact that I can have the privilege to call you a really good close friend of mine is honestly, again, really, truly special to me. And I will say this again, like, when you came into the studio that one day, like, literally a switch went off for me. Like, obviously you've known in my personal life, like, you know, the struggles that I've dealt with, like, on and off, but at the end of the day, it's people like you, it's people that I meet, even, you know, through working in this organization, that make me realize, like, I need to start surrounding myself around those kind of people. Because at the end of the day, like, you know, of course, like, band teaches us like character and good moral values and all that, but like, there's just something special with people who are, you know, involved in band and then later pursue, you know, choose to pursue it down the line. And it's just like that fostering of the community and that those interests and qualities that we all share with one another that really can't be replicated anywhere else. And yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So that, again, our friendships is something I truly hold value to and means a lot to me. Thank you. So you mentioned Blue Coats, and I want to talk about this very special moment for you. And, you know, even, you know, when I first started with UDB, we had met like a couple of times and talked a couple of times. But I truly remember when we were in Indianapolis DCI finals, you got to be, you know, a part of the Blue Coats alumni corps. Mm-hmm. And not only that, but you got to also, you know, kind of share the field with some of your students. One, Aaron Rodgers, who just recently aged out.
It was, like, Aaron Owens.
Oh, sorry, Aaron Owens. Sorry, my bad.
That's like, Aaron Rodgers is a football player.
Sorry. But
that would be awesome. Anyway. Yeah.
But I do remember, you know, you, like, we were at breakfast.
Yeah.
And you had just come back just bawling in tears. And I was like, oh my gosh, are you okay? But no, it was just pure joy and happiness that he shared from that moment. And it meant a lot to you. And I even want to share like this special like photo that you have here of both of y'all at DCI finals.
Yeah, I had another student who was actually marching this past summer too, Jack Fien.
Yeah.
So he's actually marching again. And I have a student right now who actually just made Blue Coats, and he's also a mellophone player, and all of them are mellophone players. So
that's awesome.
We have what's called the Bluey Mellows that we've started a trend.
Nice.
To have like, a little feeder into it. So anyway, but it was just such an unreal experience, honestly. And something that we've been working for, like for 4 years. So it started even before that, but like the members, had been doing things for about 4 years, learning some of the music and having, if there are people that live together, they got together to rehearse, so it was something that took a long time to do and to figure out. And just the process behind it was honestly just mind blowing to hear about just how hard everybody worked to make this thing happen. Was another reason it made it so special, but it was like, you're sharing the field with some of these like legacies that you had heard about, or just ones that you were friends with, but you had never actually met, or, ones that recently aged out that you had also known about. It's just all of these people in this one organization was able to come back together and just play really loud and like just do band again. And I am not a performer anymore. And doing that again, like, really made me miss performing, because it's really fun to be a teacher, and it's fun to be on the other side of that and get to see what you have done show, but like getting to be a part of the actual moment of that happening was not something I do anymore, And so getting, like I said, just getting to be a student again, getting to be a member on the field, performing with all these people was just like a once in a lifetime opportunity that I just couldn't pass up. And then, also having these like former students that were currently marching this organization that I loved so much, like just all of that emotion was just really overwhelming is what it is. And it was just so much fun. Like, I love band, and like Blue Coats are really the thing that like tied the knot for me to want to do this, and getting to play a baritone again was really fun, So it was just cool to have some sort of musical performance to live up to and to work up to and look forward to, and get to be around some people you hadn't seen in years, or, it was such a really cool vibe. And we talked about community. I mean, it was just like everyone, it didn't matter if they didn't know you. They just like, everyone was just nice to each other and just so happy, just because we were all there doing the same thing. Like, there was no drama or like beef with anybody. Like, we were all, it was just such a cool vibe. I mean, in the age gap, like from oldest to youngest, there was people there who marched in the from every single year, which is another reason it made it so special.
Oh, wow.
So from 1972 up until 2021, I guess, like they had someone from every single year represented. So there were 72-year-olds marching.
Wow.
And then there was a 16-year-old marching. So he wasn't actually an alumni, but he was a son of one of the alumni, and he needed to fill a spot for someone who wasn't able to make it there. So anyway, it was just like the age difference on the field was so just large. And so it was unique for that reason as well.
Yeah. And I remember like being in the stadium for that performance, and oh my gosh, like that performance was wild. The energy at the stadium, like everybody was like hooving and hollering, and it was so cool. And
yeah.
And, I had, attended like San Antonio Regional, but that was my first time actually, being at DCI Finals. So I think like for me, like, I was very blessed for that to be the year that I experienced like DCI finals for the first time. And so the fact that, they put on this special performance and just being up in the stands, getting to like feel not only the support from the audience, but like the energy that all the performers had on the field. Yeah. It was so phenomenal.
Yeah, we were just all having a blast on the field, and like to witness the whole stadium become Blue Coats fans, like ones who were just like, who is this? What's going on? Oh, an alumni corps is happening. You know, like they, a lot of them just had no idea what it was. But then by the end, they were like just total fans of the product that they just saw. And like that is rare, you know, it's rare to have like the entire stadium just kind of supporting the one thing that's happening, you know? Yeah. And it was just kind of like I loved that. One of the people involved in the alumni corps, Jay Wise, said that it was like a gift basically to the community. And everyone was just like, thank you for this gift. Like, we needed it, you know, after COVID and not really having enough true DCI finals. Like, it was really important for that. And also, like, my mom was there, you know, and she, like, for her to get to come and see me perform again was really special, because I hadn't seen her, you know, in a while. And she also has not come and watch me perform since I was actually doing it, you know, over 10 years ago. So it was just, that was another like super special moment for that reason.
Yeah. That only tells more to why you're so emotional that day. Yeah. That's, you know, a core memory that I'll also never forget about you. And you mentioned, so you mentioned like, one, you first started on like the oboe, and then you played the clarinet, and then you played baritone in Blue Coats. So how did you make that jump from like being a clarinet player to learning how to play baritone?
Honestly, it's a very funny story. So when I went to college at Tulsa, I didn't want to play clarinet anymore. I just like, no offense to the clarinet or anyone, but I just wanted to play something else. I was honestly just like, no, I want to play a brass instrument. Like, I was just totally vibing. I was interested in DCI, so I want to do it. And so, the director there asked, they were like, oh, are you a clarinet player? I was like, yeah, but I also play other things. And like, oh, we need baritone players. Do you play that? And I was like, yes. And then he gave me a baritone and a mouthpiece, and I went home and started learning. And then I'll never forget one of the days in our rehearsal, one of the drum major of the time, who was actually the American Fork director, Oren Landis, he saw me just blankly staring at the music in front of me and not doing anything in this rehearsal. And he came up and sat next to me and goes, do you know what you're doing? And I was like, no, I'm sorry, I don't. And he was like, do you know how to read music? I was like, yes, but not in this clef. I was like, I didn't know how to read bass clef at the time, you know? So it was really funny. So he sat there and he helped me try to start to write things in and like figure out the, you know, the fingerings of the baritone and everything. And so it was just, it was really funny, like how it started out. But I have a friend of mine, Blake Birmingham, who is a euphonium player. And he graciously offered to give me lessons. And so I started out doing that, and then basically just kept going from there and went to camps, like a bunch of drum corps camps, went to Crossman and Troopers and Blue Coats, like just to get as much experience and as much exposed as possible so I could just try to learn and get better from that. And I'm really glad I did. I really liked going to like a bunch of different ones and seeing the different ways that those organizations worked out. But anyway.
Yeah. And really, that's like brass methods 101, like really hands-on experience, you know, because I know like at least my music program that I came from, like I know there's like a point like in the program where you eventually have to learn all the instruments. So, you know,
that was very helpful in college. Yes. Yeah. Woodwind methods, easy. Brass methods, easy.
Yeah.
Like percussion methods, I was like, what is this? So that one I struggled with a little bit, but yeah, it definitely helped just learning. And that's also when I was like, I don't want to be a performance major, which honestly my oboe teachers hated. So they hated that I loved playing other instruments, which is another reason I was like, well, that makes me want to do it more. Whenever you tell, I was unfortunately one of those students that was like, you tell me don't do something and I kind of want to go do it.
But you turned it into positive.
But that's
experience.
What I'm saying. Like, it was because I don't want to do this. I don't want to play in a symphony. Like, that'd be awesome. But like, that's not my goal. Like, I want to be able to teach other people how to play these instruments. And so that's was that's why I did it. It's yes. like nothing against them, but it was like, I'm sorry, but this is what I want to do. I want to be in education, and that's why I'm learning all these different ones.
Yeah. So, is there a certain, this is a weird way to say it, percentage, or just like, does it fluctuate in terms of like you're wanting to be an educator of it being more music for you or more like, character building skills impact of the kids for you, or does it kind of have like a nice balance?
Definitely more character building. And that may be more recent in my teaching mm-hmm. philosophy, but yeah. I definitely know that's always something that I wanted, just because I don't like people who are mean to one another. And I just think there's a lot of hate in the world, and trying to teach the young humans to not hate each other yeah. and to deal with their problems in a better way, you know, like that's what I was kind of drawn towards, because I had that in my life, like kind of through band and through some of those teachers and mentors, and just being able to have that trust, I realized, was really important. So that's why I try to do that for my kids. Like I always say, being a band director, you're also a counselor, you know, and because you have students come in and tell you things, that are, you know, really, they're personal and important to them. And obviously if they're severe enough, you do the right thing and you go and tell the right people. But like, that's once again, like another reason you're there, so they can have that person to come to, whenever they don't want to go to just the, you know, go right to the principal, or, you know, right to a more authoritative figure, you know, in something like that, like someone they can actually come to that's a little more comforting and they can trust a little easier. Like I've had a lot of those, you know, so it's just, I would rather have those conversations, you know what I mean? To be able to help students. Like it really is empowering. Whenever you have students who like kind of open up to you about something they're really vulnerable with, but they're doing it in a way that they know that you're going to help them, you know, and I don't know if I'm really know what I'm trying to say about this, but it's just a really cool feeling, you know, whenever you're just helping students. And I love being vulnerable, and I love whenever like I'm wrong in front of the class. Mm-hmm. I love one of my students I've had for like all four of his years, and I was doing a rhythm wrong, and I was mad at the whole class for not doing it right. And he kind of like slowly raised his hand, and I was like, yes, what? Like, so I was irritated, and he goes, I think it's this. And he like told me, and I looked at it, and I realized, I was like, wow, oh my gosh. And like, it was one of those things. I just like, you know, we all kind of laughed at the fact that like I was sitting there mad at them, but they were the ones who were doing it right. Like I love when those moments happen. Like, not that I love when I mess up, but it's just, it shows like, yeah. And then I admit that I was wrong and I apologize. And, you know, I love those moments that you can show students that you, whenever you're vulnerable, like it's also okay. And like, it's okay to be wrong, and it's okay to, you know, like make mistakes and do, you know, like I like those moments for those reasons of like teaching young minds that it's okay for those things to happen, type of thing. But
yeah. And I think that's like a really important process into, you know, gaining the trust of the students. And that is something, even in myself and how it is applied to like my situation or like this podcast, is like, to be honest with you, like what I'm wearing, for those of you who aren't watching the video, what I'm wearing right now is like a sweater with some nice pants. But like at the beginning of this, I was in women power suits. And that one of the biggest reasons why I decided to like cash it down a little bit was it became this one comfortability factor that, you know, to be fairly honest, like the people that I have on this show, I don't have as much as like a deep personal connection with them like I do with you. And, you know, part of it is my age and still trying to navigate adult life. But it was also in a way like trying to like straighten my back a little bit and trying to, I don't want to say like impress is the right word, but I would, you know, try to uphold myself to like, you know, a high standard. Not saying I don't do that, but like there was just this different level shift of like, oh, like, this badass woman is coming and I have to like be like very poised and very like structured and, you know what I'm doing. And I think as this whole journey and as this whole podcast has evolved, I've really learned at the end of the day, like, in some ways they're just like me. Like, they're just like normal, you know,
yeah,
normal
exactly.
people. And you know, I mess up too, like, and so, you know, they have their own, you know, mess ups here and there as well. And I think that has, one, helped me learn to you know, without the nervousness of, you know, a microphone in front of your face and cameras being all around you. Like, it's certainly like having that shift of mentality to be like, we're all alike, we're all the same, yeah. you know, everyday people that, you know, do our job, stuff like that, has really helped this whole process. And I think has really prepared me, and even like as a whole, it's just a spiritual journey, as I call it.
Yeah.
Just to see where this started and where this is now is quite wild.
Yeah.
So. I don't know. So, lots of, I'm in therapy. I lots of self-awareness going on.
No,
here.
And that's awesome. I like, self-awareness is huge. Awareness is one of my most used words all the time. Just have awareness of others around you and be respectful of others around you. Like, self-awareness is really, really important. So yeah. I commend you for always having self-awareness.
Yeah. Well, thank you. As you know, this podcast is one to share your story and your experience and highlight who you are, but also to have, you know, some of those tough moments and tough conversations in this safe space. So I know life hasn't always treated you well. So what are the certain struggles that you've faced in your career being a woman in this community?
You know, I do think like some, like, women sometimes struggle a little bit more in this community, but I also feel like everyone does, and it's not just women. Like, I will say I was nervous taking a high school job, like, because I mean, I thankfully I still look kind of young, you know. I always tell them, just get a little closer to my face and you'll start to see the age. But I'm also short, and so walking around a high school, they're but mostly all taller than me. I mean, there are a few students that are actually shorter than me, but almost all of them are taller. So when I'm talking to them, I'm like looking up to them, you know, and that can be difficult for women. And just in general, like, we just have a lot of masculinity in the world. And, you know, it was just going back to, you know, ancient times. It's just kind of always been like men and then women, you know? And so I think we have as a society, you know, have grown into more of like an equal, you know, type of, I mean, women can vote now, which is yeah. not how it used to be, you know, stuff like that. But I do just think like the more experience I had and the more mature that I say mature and then I can't form a sentence, but like the more, I think more mature I became as far as communicating with people, that helped. And so if someone would kind of come up and not really respect me, and then I would start talking type of thing, and then they would maybe start to listen a little bit more, you know, just yeah. because they could tell I actually had knowledge. I actually had knowledge.
Yeah.
I actually like had words of wisdom, and I could actually speak to them in coherent sentences and was actually able to contribute to the conversation and speak my mind. And they were like, oh, this person is not a child type of thing. Cause that's, I guess, how a lot of people would view me personally, just, because of how I looked. And I will say that I have taken advantage of that sometimes when I have seen like angry parents or an angry someone coming up trying to find an adult, and I just turn around and I just go and I walk. I have legit gone and just squeezed into like conversations that my students are having, and they're like, what's going on? I'm like, I'm one of you guys right now. And they're like, what's happening? And I was like, there's someone that's coming up trying to find a band director. I can tell they're unhappy, so I'm just gonna let one of them deal with it, you know. It was like some of those funny moments that I was able to like kind of escape from the, like, I am not the adult, you know. And I always joke with my students saying, you know, the day that they look at me and they're like, that's the teacher, that's the adult in the room, you know, like that's when I know that I'm now officially old. You know, it's like they don't say that now, but I mean I've worked with all men, all tall men who have facial hair, you know, like they've always been kind of you know, bigger and more intimidating looking. So of course I don't have the same stature as they do. So truthfully, that's been most of the struggle is whenever I'm just trying to advocate for myself, I have to do a lot of it in person and not just like them assuming and then seeing how I look and then thinking, oh, that's not going to work. You know, I just, it's been helpful just to be able to speak up for myself. And honestly, like my mom is a big reason that I'm like that because she is the person who is like that. If you've met my mom, but everyone else is not, but it was just, she's very, very similar, to me, like it's kind of the spitting image of the person, and she never took crap from anybody type of thing and never really cared what people thought. And I just really respected that and lived by that, you know, and as I grew up, I actually started to live by it. Yeah. You know, it took a while, but it's once I finally got there, it was just like, okay. Like I just, once you, when you stop caring more, your life actually gets better almost, you know, like,
yes. Oh my gosh. You're preaching to the choir right now. Like I've been in a similar boat where, I used to care so deeply about what other people thought of me. And then the moment I stopped caring in my life, like there's this huge weight off my shoulders and my life became so much easier. It's why, I don't know if I like worn like short sleeves in front of you.
I don't know. Okay. I don't know if I've memorized all of your outfits.
Okay. Well, I only say that because I have a tattoo right here.
Oh, you're right.
I'm not sure if my tattoo, like on my, my left upper arm here, like it's all dedicated to like self-love and self-acceptance, but there's this core one right here. I got when I was 18 and it says, when I accept myself, I'm freed from the burden of needing you to accept me.
Yep.
And so
that's perfect.
And so that was like a pinnacle moment, in my life where I really stopped to really learn to stop caring about what other people thought of me. And that's something I live by every day.
When did you get that?
When I was 18.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah. So like that was like pinnacle, like getting out of high school right into college. And it took me 18 years to learn that. But you know, since then
it takes a people a lot longer than 18 years to learn that. And sometimes never. You know, and I see lots of adults still that really care about what others think. And I'm sad for them just because I'm like, no, you're perfect who you are. You know, like just live your life. Like who cares type of thing. Like you care in a certain way. Like like I'm not going to show up to work wearing pajama pants and, you know, but I do not show up in like suits and like slacks, you know, yeah. Because I'm not really comfortable teaching in that. And the environments that we're given to teach in are usually not that good. And you're like having to clean things and, you know, so like being able to have, you can still like dress to impress type of thing, you know, just yeah. by the way you speak, I think is another really way to be able to do that. And I think I've been able to manage that at Bowie, and I now no longer get asked where I'm supposed to be in the halls because everyone has finally learned who I am. And so especially, I mean, in this head position, I don't have that happen a lot just because, you know, my name is on a lot of things now, and I'm clearly the only female on staff. And so it's obvious for them to be like, oh, that must be the head director, not like, oh, that's the guard staff. Or like that's the guard director, which is what I was thought of most of the time when I was around my staff.
Yeah. And going off of that, like there are more women now who are, you know, are in head director's positions, but not a lot. And so what was kind of like your journey to, you know, rising to being a head director position?
Well, as you know, I didn't really want it at first. So I wanted to be a head director someday. Like that was a goal. But man, when I was second position, like number two, like that's a sweet gig. Like, you just help the head director, you do the logistics that they don't need to do, and they handle all of, you know, the BS and the paperwork and the admin and the meetings and the, you know, they handle all the stuff that I never was interested in wanting to do. And there was never a point in my life when I watched both of the head directors before me and I was like, wow, your job's amazing. I want to do your job so bad. You know, like, there was never a time that I felt that, just because I watched what they had to go through all the time. And most of the time it was just like, I'm glad I'm not the head director.
Yeah.
And there were multiple moments over a trip that my staff and I, we took with the band when we went to South Padre, and it was just like issue after issue after issue after issue. And it was just like one of those moments again that I was like, wow, I'm really glad that I'm not having to really deal with all this stuff. Like, and maybe that's just like, that makes me kind of sound a little lazy, but that's not what it was. It was just, you know, it was nice to be in the position. Like, I was getting to run the marching band, you know, I was getting to teach the top jazz band. I was teaching the symphonic band, you know, the second band. So I still was able to like teach these amazing ensembles with like these great musicians. And I was getting to do what I wanted to do in this position while still able to, you know, assist the head director, but they still dealt with all of the, you know, more difficult situations and tasks like finances. 'Cause I am really bad about that. I don't really check my bank accounts a whole bunch. You know, I do every now and then to make sure it's okay, but it's like, I don't really keep track of everything. I've never really done that. Like, please don't hate me for saying that. Yeah. But like, it's just, I don't know, one of those things that I've just been able to be okay with. And so when I was given this, this task of like multiple accounts with which have lots of money in them, and it was like, please make sure this doesn't get messed up. And it was like, okay, like,
yeah,
okay, I'll try type of thing. So that's been a big learning curve for me, is having to deal with all of that. But regardless, like, once I actually got the job, I realized that I was really glad that I got it. And there were some people that we had in line for this position before who would have been absolutely amazing. And I would have been perfectly happy staying number two under their direction. However, it didn't work out. A lot of it was that the pay in, you know, in this district is not super comparable to other places, especially in the country. So anyway, weren't able to get someone that we wanted, and at kind of just like through process of elimination, it almost just became like, we didn't want to keep searching for anybody, because if we did, we would still just be doing, we, like my staff and I, like we would still be doing everything for this person because they would have no understanding of how to do it. You know, it was just kind of like, at that point, I didn't really want to work for anybody else except myself. And I had, like I said, I had lots of conversations with lots of people. And honestly, the parents helped sell this for me, because they were like, we have your back and we are going to come in and we're going to help you and we're going to make sure everything is organized and we're going to like take as much off your plate. And then my staff said the same thing. And they were like, basically, we're all in this together. Like, you taking this job is not like sink or swim type of figure it out. It was like, no, we're all getting on this life raft and we're going to figure this out together. So that was really encouraging for me to know I had this massive support team from everybody. So that was really what kind of tipped me over to be like, okay, I think I'll be okay. You know? So.
Yeah. And I think, you know, to your point, I mean, I'm sure a lot of other, even outside of like music educators, feel this way, but like, y'all love like teaching, not the necessarily the admin side of it, because I don't believe in college you learn how to, you know, manage budgets and sign paperwork and and do all those things. But you know, aside from that, now have been in the head position, what are some of the things that you're like grateful for, like that make you love, you know, your job?
Honestly, I really love my staff. Like, that's, you have to like the people you work with. Otherwise, it's not going to be fun.
Yeah.
And whenever your staff gets along, it transfers down to the kids, like in the students. And so, I love my students and I love teaching the wind ensemble. Like, I've talked to lots of head directors and they just like would smile when they were talking to me. They're like, Jen, just wait until you get in front of that wind ensemble. Like Brian Frock, who just retired from Austin High, was like, Jen, it's like riding a Cadillac. He's like, you're along for the ride at that point. And like, I kind of understood his point when I was in front of them. And I was just like, damn, they're good. Like, it was just so cool to be in front of like these high schoolers who were just like killer musicians, you know? And so like now I was teaching like two of the top ensembles, the top jazz and now the wind ensemble. And then that is whenever I was happiest. It's like, as soon as the bell rang, I would go back in the office and I'd just sit at the desk and I was like, cause I just didn't want to open my computer and do work. I just like wanted to go back out and teach some more, you know, cause that's what was really fun. And so, that is why I still enjoy doing it. And I've, you know, I joke about like, give me 3 years in this position and then I'll say if I want to stay or leave, but it's like, no, like I'm in this until I hate going to work every day and I'm miserable in front of the kids. Like, that is when I know that I shouldn't be teaching anymore. And I'm not there yet. So that's why I'm going to stay doing it. And as long as I can, just cause I know like lots of people are finding other jobs and, as enticing as that sometimes is, because you don't make a lot of money in this field and there's not a lot of time to do other things, you know, but it's like, no, but this is what I wanted to do for so long and I'm going to do it until I don't want to do it anymore.
Yeah.
So.
No, that's truly amazing. Well, before we wrap up here, I do have one last question for you. Knowing the knowledge that you have now, what is something that you wish you would have told yourself or advice you wish you would have given as that student that was just about to quit band?
I would say, why didn't you? I'm just kidding. You saved yourself. No, no, I'm just kidding. Honestly, I empathize so much with my students. Sometimes I wonder if I do it too much, but you know, I sometimes watch students who are truly just not happy in band. And so when I have those conversations, whenever they're like, I don't want to do this. I don't really want to play my instrument. And so I ask like, what are you going to do instead? And whenever they don't have something, then I say, you have no reason to leave band. Like, you need this in your life until you are actually able to find what you are passionate about. But like, I would have told my young self, like, what else are you going to do? You know? And if the answer was, well, I don't know, then I would have been like, then you're not quitting, you know, then you're going to stick with it until you figure out what you want. Cause I totally respect students who come in and they're just like, I cannot dedicate this time anymore. And like, I like being in band, but I'm not able to do both. Like, I feel really strongly about this, you know, and they're like, they're doing something else that they're super passionate about. And I can tell that that's what they really like to do. And I'm okay with letting them go because they have something else in their life that's important. But for young, just realize like in this job for however long it's been, but I've realized that that is crucial in a student's life, is they have to have something to, some sort of community, some sort of activity to keep them motivated and keeping, like, I was not a straight A student, like just was not. And so band helped me keep my grades up because I was like, if I'm not passing, I don't get to do band, you know? Yeah. And so it was like, that helped me growing up. And I know that that also needs, like, that helps some of these students as well. So that's what I would always tell myself. Like, if you were going to quit, then you better be quitting for something else that you're really passionate about and not just because, oh, I don't like to do this thing anymore. So just trying to encourage myself to stick with it. And if you don't like it, you better find something else that you're also passionate about. So,
where can our viewers, listeners find you? Is there like, I don't know, Austin ISD website or social media you would like to throw out there?
Yeah, it's like I have an Instagram and Facebook. You know, I'm still old school. I don't have TikTok or anything else that is out there, or like, oh, BeReals. Yeah, I learned about BeReals. I will thank my students for keeping me in the know of all the latest slang and all the new apps that are out there. But yeah, Instagram tag is Hennifer Janford. It's my little first and last name.
I love that so much.
Yeah, Facebook is just Jennifer Hanford. You'll So you can find me there. But,
yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you once again for being on the show.
Of course. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you.
Femme Forte is produced and hosted by me, Amanda DeFries. Theme song is by Humans Win. For more information, follow us on social media at Femme Forte Podcast and StrideTV.com.